take it all away.
Very nice. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. And if you're just joining us, welcome to the roundtable and the discussion of the morning. Playing a little tax music this morning. I think Liz has picked some good tax songs. So that was Robert Cray, 1040 Blues. We'll be hearing that for obvious reasons this morning. And well, good morning. Welcome. Let me introduce everybody and then we'll get started. We have a lot to talk about. The Congress, the Senate, very busy. They had to vote, in some cases twice. And we'll talk about what was going on, what is going on, and find out more in just a moment. Teresa Bourgeois is here. She joins us many times. She joins us Monday, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. It's a Wednesday. She's here, and we're delighted. Thank you very much. Communications consultant.
Delighted to be here.
Thank you very much.
On this sad day. As it begins.
Look at the bereft. Chris Churchill to
your
left.
He
is
Chris Churchill. Neil McGarks are in charge. He's happy.
Chris Churchill is a columnist for the Times Union and a damn good one. He is a regular in this program. We get him as much as we can, and he is here today, and we're thrilled. Chris, good morning.
Good
Thank
morning.
You very much for being with us.
Glad to be here.
Another wonderful reporter in our region, Jen Smith, who is a reporter and covers the education beat as well as any other beat that comes her way at the Berkshire Eagle, and it's always a delight to have her with us.
I think the best reporter on the Berkshire Eagle, to be perfectly honest with you. I mean, I think they're all good, but I think Jen is, you know, she's just superior.
See, we have her favorites. Dr. Alan Chartok is here as well. Good morning, Alan. How are you, sir?
I'm good, but I'm worried. And the reason that I'm worried is I'm very concerned because we only have a few days until the new tax law is going to be
11 days.
11 days. And in those 11 days, we really have to do as well as we can because we don't know what's going to happen. We do know that there's something major on the horizon, which I'm not allowed to talk about yet, but which will be the difference between WAMC surviving and not, which will be coming up. And so I need everybody. It's a legal issue, which is why I can't tell you exactly what it is right now. But I can tell you that anything you can put in, which will be deductible, and I think that's important because for some people it is important, this is the time to do it. I need you to do it. We need you to do it. We all are in this together. You go to WMC.org and do anything you can. Talk to your accountant. The accountant will tell you, yeah, this is the time to do it. Do it right now. So there we are. And that's all I have to say about that. Please.
Please and thank you. WAMC.org, WAMC.org. You can also call us 1-800-323-9262, 1-800-323-9262. Is it a billion degrees in here? Seems very warm.
It is a little warm.
It's heated up even before Chris and I started.
Oh, I know. That's good.
I think I'll undo my schmata.
Okay.
Maybe we'll agree on everything. You never know.
Yeah, we'll see what...
Have you changed your opinion now that you've read the text?
No, but I'm sure that you have.
And so it begins.
We love our Lizzie. She just went out there to lower it, Joe.
Thank you.
She's lowering
the
temperature.
Thank you, Liz. All right. Well, good morning. So let's get started and find out what's happening in the world today. It got all very interesting, and I'm actually interested in having and some of the procedural stuff. Talk to Teresa about that, but we'll do that in a moment. So we have a passage here of the tax bill, and the House approved the most sweeping tax rewrite in decades along party lines. To really no surprises here, right? That this happened. Senate Republicans passed the final tax plan, and before the president signs, the House must approve three minor changes. They screwed up a little, right?
Yeah, they put education provisions in that were not germane. You couldn't vote with this 60 votes, so they had to take them out on the Senate side. And the House and Senate have to pass the exact same language, so they're going to vote again today on the House side.
Which they will do.
It's a procedural situation, procedural vote, and then the president can't sign it yet because there's a process that has to happen before the bill gets sent up to the president for signature. But as I understand it, this afternoon, I don't know if the time has been set yet, it was still up in the air during the night, but there'll be some, we'll call it ceremonial, there'll be some activity at the White House this afternoon acknowledging the passing of, what's the passing? It's what's passing? The bill, our democracy, as we know it.
The final tax plan. So this is the vote in the Senate, 51-48, with one not voting. So the question, well, there's a lot to talk about, obviously. We've talked a lot about the plan itself, but there is a year when legislative victories have eluded them. Republicans secured a big one at the end, but at what cost? Now they brace for 2018 and see what this does in the coming year for their electoral chances. And Alan, what do you think? Are they in trouble?
Well, here's the deal. This is a stinker bill. We know it's a stinker bill because poll after poll show that the American people, despite anything Chris Churchill may have to say about how everybody's getting a tax cut, that's called, I just saw Ferdinand the Bull, that's what the picador does, he gives you a little stick. It's a stinker bill. And the American people know it by overwhelming margins. They know it stinks. Stands the turtle, Mitch McConnell, and he intones that people will get to like it when they get to understand it. But it really has to do with the DNA of the people who are running the country, the oligarchy. And they are basically making the case, I think, that this is going to be good. It's going to be trickle down.
Bless you.
Sorry about that.
Bless you.
Yeah, I heard it coming for a while back there. It was like a train you see coming down the track. This is a bad bill because they say it's going to trickle down. They have talked to all of the CEOs. They've surveyed them all, and they say, nonsense. We're not going to take that money and put it where raising workers' salaries or hiring more people or building more factories. We're at almost 100% employment right now. So this is nonsense. Now, Chris is going to tell you everybody's going to get a tax cut, but I guess I
don't even have to be here.
There goes Chris. He's talking right now.
That was the puppet.
I have
the Chris puppet
taking a look at the shark talk taxes, and you know, you don't have to be Einstein to figure out, you know, you're not going to be able to deduct your state and local taxes in Massachusetts to the degree that you were before. We're going to be gross losers on this, and you know, this is a bad bill by people whose DNA basically says get every penny you can as long as you can.
Well, I've never said that this was some sort of great bill or that it's, you know, God's gift to the American taxpayer, but I do think the gloom and doom is a little overwrought. There's bad things in this bill, and there's some really good things in this bill. There are things that will help wealthy people too much, and there are things that probably don't help middle-class people enough, but the truth is that almost everybody is getting a tax cut out of this, and for some people it's pretty significant. I ran my own calculations through, and I think we're saving $2,100. That's like a 35% tax cut. That's a big deal to people. And, you know, EJ.
Do you own your own home?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And you can't deduct your state and local taxes?
It doesn't matter because the standard deduction is being doubled to $24,000. Very, very few people, unless you pay just a whopping amount of property taxes. And downstate, some people do, and they will be hurt by this.
Well, how much
if you look
your
at
house
the, what the Tax Policy Center says about this,
don't
80% of people get a tax cut, 15% it's the same, 5% will pay more. I'm guessing those 5% are generally in the New York City suburbs, California, places where property taxes are really high.
But well,
the
Teresa,
vast majority of people in upstate New York get a pretty big tax cut out of this.
Teresa's going to tell you why you're wrong.
So just to be clear, I believe that $2,000 is a lot of money, or $1,800, or even for some people, $800. And I remember years ago when I was working on an effort to, with Senator Kennedy, was raising the minimum wage, one of the things...
Name dropper.
Sorry. No, but one of the things we realized in that process was that people, reporters included, thought, you know, it really wasn't that much money. And so we wanted to make clear why it would make a difference to average working families. So we went out and bought groceries, baby food, and put them on a table at a press conference so people could visually see. You could buy this much more baby food in a week if you had this amount of increase in the minimum wage, mm-hmm. to get people realizing that for people who live at the margins or even above that, it makes a difference. So yes, $2,000 or $800 or whatever people are going to get is a significant amount of money. The problem with this bill is that it's not just the tax cut. You are going to lose that difference in other changes
exactly.
in your economy. People's health care premiums are going to go up because of the changes they've made in health care. People's other taxes. You're going to have a state increased economic burden on state and local governments. You're going to have all the bill we're not talking about, you know, we're talking about the tax bill that did pass, but there's a corresponding budget bill that needs to be passed by Friday, which they can't reach agreement on. Mm-hmm. So they may kick it down the road till the beginning of January. But that's going to be the beginning of what will be, I consider, devastating cuts that will have an economic impact on all of us. You just saw this horrible train crash in Washington state. Well, they're going to be in that deep, deep cuts in Amtrak. You know, what's the cost to those communities?
But,
what's the cost?
To you, and this is kind of repeating what we did last week, but my argument to you would be those are all hypotheticals. And some of those things are future votes that have to take place. This bill doesn't cut Amtrak. You know, you're talking about other things that may happen as a result.
You can't see this bill in isolation, because if you explode the deficits, you have to pay for it.
Smaller than the tax cut that went through in 2012. Did that have any ramifications?
Why do the economists think they don't think that it's going to? Businesses say we're not going to add jobs. Economists say that businesses are not going to add jobs. The problem in this country is that wages are stagnant. That's why we have, and that there's a huge income inequality in this country. This bill expands the income inequality. This is the oligarchs bill. This is not why
it does. In a lot of ways, it does. I agree with you that it does expand income inequality.
That's not good for democracy.
No, it's not. But
or
I also
for average
think.
People's
but I
lives.
Also think there are reasons to think that wages will go up, and it's not just a tax bill. There's a severe labor shortage out there.
There has been, and wages have remained stagnant.
Right, and many companies are going to have to start. It's getting worse and worse.
People at the top have paid themselves more. People at the bottom and the middle, their wages have remained stagnant.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but let me just ask two diagnostic questions. One is, how do you feel about trickle-down economics?
I think it's problematic. I mean, I think that there is some truth to the fact that if you put more money into the economy, that it's generally helpful to the economy. I'm not sure.
Even people on Fox News say this bill isn't good for people.
So then even President Obama said we had to have a corporate tax cut, that it was an essential thing to do.
We did, but not in the worst way. This is in the worst way.
I'm sorry. Well, so
Obama's
quick.
Argument was that a corporate tax cut would help boost wages.
Second diagnostic question is, do you believe this is trickle-down economics?
Some of it is, but I don't think, not when you talk about a 35% tax cut for middle-class people, I don't think that
could Jen have a chance?
Yes,
here?
Jen, go ahead.
Well, I think that there are some bigger issues, you know, regardless of the immediate facts. And, you know, yes, it's true. There are people who will immediately see tax cuts. But I think you have to look, from my perspective, as I'm looking at this issue as a bigger, longer term issue, there are definitive effects and questions that are raised from just the hastiness of this process, you know, compared to other legislative measures that are happening right now. You know, I think Joe put on our list DACA, for example. You know, that's something that's been years in the process. This is something that's been passed in a couple of months, mostly in private. So what does that mean for just, again, talking about the process of democracy, for sure? I think it's also, you have to look at it, you know, what else are the uncertain variables? You know, Teresa's mentioned a few things that could possibly happen. But there's a lot of things in the spending bill, and including the recent passage of the really massive defense bill, that could really have some effect on, you know, how it interacts with taxes. So I think you can't look at it in an isolated situation.
One last thing, and then I'll shut up. Chris mentioned, he said the wealthy and then the middle class. But this bill, as we all know, Teresa, and is really going to cripple a lot of people at the lowest end of this. We're not talking middle class here.
Well,
we're
how do you figure? People. I mean, what? Well, give me a concrete example.
I'll tell you how I figure. You're taking 13 million people off of health care.
Exactly
13
right.
13 million people. And a lot of those are babies and young children who will not get to see a doctor.
And you're advantaging.
I'm sorry, Alan, but that's just inaccurate.
That's not inaccurate.
That 13 million number comes from the fact that there will no longer be the mandate. So many of those 13 million are making a choice not to renew. They're not being kicked off. They're not being thrown off. They're not babies. These are people who are choosing, because it will no longer be the individual mandate, to not enroll for health insurance. That's a fundamentally different.
Then what happens?
Okay,
Chris?
But that's
what
different
happens to
than saying
people?
That. But that's not babies, though. You can say that there will be.
What about the 9 million children who are not going to get Child Health Plus? You see, this is not in the tax bill, but they didn't work out, and Hatch says they don't have funding for these 9 million children on the Child Health Plus program.
I have no doubt that that will get done.
That's bipartisan. Well, good for you.
I mean, that's also a separate thing. You're throwing in all these other things,
but they are
really
all
directly
integrated
related.
Because they all have a dollar. It's what we value in this country.
Right.
It's all about choices, and so the choice that they made is people at high-end private schools get a tax deduction. Yet this is set up so in the end, public schools won't have as much money. So is that the priority in this country, that people already have the capacity to pay, get more of a tax deduction for sending their kids to private schools while we further strain public education?
So let me, before Chris answers, let me go to our education reporter to look at that line of questioning as far as the impact on education.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think there's a lot of challenges that tie into education, spending, budgeting, and taxes. I think, you know, we're looking at both a diversification and at the same time a consolidation of the education system, which is challenged by a lot of things that are happening through the Department of Ed. So I could go on probably for an hour about those.
We
those
only have 20
too,
seconds.
But in that 20 seconds, let me just say that I heard on NPR this morning, maybe incorrectly, that this private school deduction was out.
I think that was stripped out.
Did that came out last night?
I think that was part of the thing that had to come out.
Okay,
but there's still the 529 provision.
Okay, we'll hold there. We'll find out more. And you can write a letter to us, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We will continue our conversation after this short break. Good morning. Teresa Bourgeois is here. Chris Churchill is here. You'll hear them fight in a second. Jen Smith is with us. Jen and Teresa are going at each other like cats and dogs. Alan Chartok as well.
Also trying to get in a word edgewise.
Yes, I know.
Hey, that's not a problem for you, Alan.
What do you think about the oligarchs, Alan, taking over?
All right.
Where's the hat?
Go to letters, and we'll move on here.
Okay, we got a lot of letters, as you might imagine. People are quite concerned about this. Hello, panel. Please tell Mr. Churchill that it's disingenuous to tout the increase in the standard deduction without also mentioning the complete elimination of the personal exemption. For a couple to file a joint tax return, the $12,000 increase in the standard deduction is mostly offset by a $9,100 loss of the personal exemption. For a family with children, the increase in the standard deduction is more than offset by the loss of the personal exemptions. And that's from Victor.
Yeah, but that ignores, or just in the for the family with children, that ignores that they doubled the child tax credit. So there's a benefit there that families with children will see.
David says, listener, comment, Chris is making an argument against himself. We have a severe labor shortage, in his own words, plus we have record corporate profits. This is clearly not the economic condition that would require borrowing $1.5 trillion from the Treasury.
That's actually true. I actually agree with that point to a large degree. I do think that you generally see tax cuts like this when the economy is not doing well, and that's generally when they're the most effective. To do it when the economy is roaring is untraditional.
Teresa.
And what you should be doing now is investments.
That's generally,
you should be doing investments in research. You should be doing investments in infrastructure. this is the time, economists would argue, is a time for investments.
And by the way,
except for that, doesn't pad Trump's pocket.
The Democrat president is saying that we should be investing in infrastructure right now. But so far, what do we got?
The caveat to that, though, is that in most economic booms, you see wage growth, and there hasn't been that in this one. So some would argue that anything you can do to perhaps boost wages is, you know, it's a good time to do it.
I feel like, though, in this day and age, you have to be careful and banking on traditional trends of macroeconomics, and that I think there's so much unpredictability, especially with some of the other, you know, budget expenditures that we've had in the past year. I mean, look at how much natural disasters have cost our country in the past year, and I don't see that slowing down either. I think there's many more variables to look ahead for and how it'll affect.
Well, the deficit is exploding, and there's no doubt about that. I mean, and neither party seems to care anymore.
And how you have to balance it in the end, and even in this bill, there, I believe there's a provision that, you know, says there's some correlation between, you know, how much tax reductions can happen before you sort of hit that limit. And so you're going to have, you know, the individual taxes, you know,
how are we going to pay for disasters? They're hoping
to bring a lot more money into the system. I mean, that's the great hope that all these companies that have it is a gamble. And I think even Paul Ryan admitted today that he doesn't know if it'll work. But all these companies that have money parked offshore, they're hoping some
in
of
the
that
moon
money
tide.
Comes back.
Except for a number of economists, I'm not an economist, I only know this from reading, say that in fact there are incentives in this bill to keep money offshore. That there's no evidence that the money will come back.
No, and in the polling, it's quite unclear. You're quite right, Teresa.
Economists say there's no evidence that the money will come back, well, and in fact, more incentives.
You can find economists to say anything.
43 out of 44 polled by the, including across the.
I'm sure that somebody with a different. Well, I'm sure.
You know, 4 out of 5 doctors recommend
exactly
Colgate. Exactly.
University of Chicago.
Letters.
Okay, Barry says gloom and doom. The gloom and doom is not about the tax bill. The gloom and doom is about how the American public has become so ignorant that it allows what is going on to happen. And that's from Barry. And Mark says, Jobs, you keep saying the Republicans will be voted out of office in 2018. Big deal. They'll still receive their salaries for life. If I lose my job, I lose my pay. Mark, that's true, right, Teresa, in terms of the incredible benefits that any member of Congress gets after they lose office?
They still do get their pensions and such, but
the pensions but are
I,
huge.
I, the point that he's making, I think, is the problems, you know, that we already now have the consequences of them being there. That's what I was thinking. You know, we talk about the politics of this and what will it do in the future, but the damage is done now. I mean, this is going to cause damage to our economy for a long time. And you take this in conjunction with the judges that they've just pushed through in the last few weeks, who are all young, with lifetime appointments, very, very conservative, and all the stuff that's going on in the federal agencies that we're not paying a lot of attention to, the regulatory changes, drilling in the Arctic. I mean, the combination is
your
devastating.
Your point is well taken. I really do think so. They pass this tax bill, and even if they lose their offices, they still got the benefits.
Right.
I mean, that's
Trump still, you know, it's lining his family's pockets and the Mercer's family's pockets.
I think
you know?
The point people miss, though, is that tax bills can be reversed pretty easily. Everyone is saying that this is the end of our democracy. It's just hyperbole.
But not
another Congress could come in at some point and reverse a
Well,
lot
not
of
for the next 3 years. You got a president, assuming he doesn't get impeached. You got a president who's going to veto anything.
All right, for 3 years, but 3 years is not that long of a time.
Well, let me put it this way, Chris. In my life, it's a long time.
And if you look, the Politico, Joanne Kennan has a piece in Politico.
At least one person left. What?
She's a healthcare reporter, and she has a piece today in Politico about all the range of things that the Trump folks have done, including what's in this package, to dismantle the healthcare as we know it in this country. And so, you know, if you have a pre-existing condition, you're in trouble.
Elizabeth says, tax cut package. Panel, jobs will be created when, in capital letters, people can buy more things. Not because corporations have more money. No business person will hire a worker if demand for their product has not changed. Supply-side economics is a scam that Republicans keep falling for. And as long as you were talking about that, These are the same guys, these Republicans, who have been insisting all along that we can't have deficit spending in this country, and now they're on board.
Yeah, that is hypocritical. But to go back to what she said, more money in people's pockets. This is a tax cut for the vast majority of Americans.
I don't think that's
a fairly significant
one. I think the challenge there, though, is, you know, the way the stimulus is supposed to work when you make tax cuts is that, you know, more investments are potentially made into infrastructure, into building the workforce. And, you know, the money that I get back, even if I get, you know, $1,500 back, I can barely invest that personally as, you know, a lower middle class person into maybe a CD. You know, I'm not making any major investments. You know, I'm not doing any, you know, extremely major spending. I think people, you know, my age, I'm fortunate enough, but I work two jobs to pay off my student loan. But I think the money that people get to, I think people are being more choosy about where they take the money saved and what they're putting it into.
But the argument, though, is that if you get $1,500, mm-hmm. you will spend it pretty quickly. Whereas somebody who's wealthier will maybe just sock it away in a bank somewhere. You'll spend it and put it directly into the economy where you are. And
maybe, but maybe I'll use it to pay off a credit card.
Well, that's still plenty.
Just made our point.
Not only that.
But my point is you're arguing that middle class people don't get a tax cut, and that's just plainly false.
Not
they
only
do
that.
Get
and
a tax
temporary.
Cut.
I don't think Elizabeth is making the point you thought she was making. Jobs will be created when, in capital letters, people can buy more things, not because corporations have more money. She's not saying they can spend their $500. She's saying the wages aren't going up. That's what she's saying.
But the vast amount of this money goes to the people at the top. If you want to stimulate purchasing in this country, you have to give it to people at the lower economic levels.
You just spoke
against your own argument.
I did not, because people in my tax bracket and most middle class tax cut brackets are getting like a 35%. How much more do people need? That's a significant cut.
If you're not watching,
run
this
the numbers.
On,
run the
if
numbers.
On, if you're not watching this on our viewer app here, you can't see Teresa slapping the side of her head with her hand.
Do you not agree with that?
My good hand.
All right, hold on. Go ahead.
Do you not agree with that point? You don't think that there's a tax cut the 80% of Americans are getting a tax cut with this?
I only know what
yes
I read from the experts. What the experts say is that the vast majority of this, the highest percentage of this is going to the wealthiest
people.
The
tax policy
in
center,
any,
the
any money.
Letter just right. Right.
Well, she didn't answer my question.
I'm answering.
Oh, well.
I've answered it 4 or 5 times. Yes, $2,000 is real money, but it will be offset by other costs to you immediately, so you won't really have that money to spend.
Exactly.
But the people at the upper levels, they will get this and they will pocket it. They won't spend it. That's why one of the architects of trickle-down economics was against this. Bruce Bartlett. Read it. Sorry.
Let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll have more letters. We have a lot of letters. We'll be right back after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Jen Smith, Chris Churchill, and Teresa Bourgeois. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. Alan has more.
Okay. Child Health Plus. The premium is $200 a month, not subsidized per child. There are not copays or deductibles. It's a Medicaid network. Our pediatrician is in. It's great. Without Child Health Plus, we can put child on our insurance, also a marketplace plan, parentheses not subsidized, but for $400 or $500 a month with copays and deductibles, and that's from Allison and Carmel. Okay, pork, says William. Why doesn't anyone talk about the pork that has been added to the tax bill? Special interest, environmental disregard, terrible. And that's from Bill in Barneville, New York. Carl says, good morning.
Good morning.
None of the people who voted know all of the details of this bill. Bad precedent. One effect of the cuts will be a spike in mergers and acquisitions, which almost always cause job losses through consolidation. That's from Carl.
Particularly with banks, which is interesting.
And Michael says, tax cuts. The Republicans have hid the actual tax increases well, such an increase in health insurance premiums. Their base will only see the higher tax refund and exemption. This will favor the Republicans at the polls. I don't think so. I think right now, the Republicans are going to face fierce pushback on this tax bill. And that's what the polls are showing anyway. And our friend Daisy says, this bill ultimately is about destroying Medicare, Social Security, and Medicaid. Republicans are always starting to talk about cuts. Are already starting to talk about cuts. If the Dems don't start articulating this point all the time and in every way, shame on them. The Kochs are officially in charge of our country. Happy New Year. And that's from Daisy. And Manisha says, standard deduction. Every time someone mentions doubling the standard deduction without mentioning that they took away personal exemptions, I want to scream in capital letters. It is misleading to state it that way. Do the math, people. For some families, this is a loss, not a gain. And that's from Lynn from Pittsfield and Kevin from Melrose 55300. 17 of the top 25 most federally dependent states are ruby red. Trump promised not to touch Medicare, Medicaid. Speaker Ryan has vowed to cut entitlements next. Will Trump go against his base? Good morning, says James. By the time the worst effects of the tax bill take effect and the entire country is in the same economic handbasket as Kansas, Republicans will have been voted out of office just because Democrats will be in the majority. The economy will be in shambles, and the Republicans will be blaming the Democrats, just like after W's presidency. Are we now dealing with alternative calculations? And that's James and Williams there.
That's really insightful about who will be in control when the bad stuff happens.
And Paul says, please tell Chris Churchill that until the government takes in as much money as they pay out, they have to borrow money in the forms of treasury bonds. That means that $1.8 trillion giveaway to the rich is going to be borrowed. Why is this a good idea?
Chris, what he said.
Well, I'm not saying it's a good idea necessarily, and I do think that, you know, the deficit is just something that people should be concerned about, you know. But my only point with this with the tax bill is that people keep acting like there's no benefit for middle class people, and there clearly is.
Okay, and Doug says, every time the Republicans get into power, they put the economy into the toilet. Then the Democrats have to fix it. It happened with Bush 1, then Bush 2, and now again under Trump. And that's from Doug in Woodstock. And Russ from Manan says, so passage of the tax bill was held up to stuff in more loopholes for supporters Cruz and McConnell. It's a small consolation, but historians will someday recount the exploits of this Congress and administration with the same glee they now taken telling tales of Tammany Hall and Teapot Dome. And Justin says, I wanted to hear your take on the Democrats' apparent backing down from a showdown fight over the Dreamers. It feels to me like a slap in the face to the activists who just delivered victories in Virginia and Alabama and many more, laying the groundwork for 2018. It's long past time the Democrats took a principled stand on this issue instead of taking Mitch McConnell's word that the vote will come next year. And by the way, many Republicans were standing up on CNN this morning and saying they've been assured, Republicans, that there will be a Dreamers Act.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What will it look like?
and from Molly, hi panel, and thanks for the stimulating conversation. But re-taxes, shouldn't we be looking at the examples of Oklahoma and Kansas? After tax cuts, both states are limping back to fiscal stability. Even huge corporations in Oklahoma are advocating for increasing taxes on the wealthy, and that's from Molly.
You're right, Molly.
Whose relatives I hear. Went after, never mind, animals on Allerton Avenue. There were, my friends at the Bochnikovs, they used to trap animals out there in the park. You're all looking at each other.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
I had
sorry.
Some friends at Hunter College. They used to trap raccoons in the Allerton Avenue.
I was looking at Teresa for help. I thought maybe she could.
I'm lost. Is this a euphemism for something? I don't know.
Quick, get the Shark Talk to English. English to Shark Talk dictionary, will you?
Okay, and here we are. Dave says,
I'm sure you understood what she was saying.
Text bill says this. You want to say it again because I missed that. I'm so sorry.
She said, I'm sure you understood what you were
saying. That's all that matters.
Well, maybe not. Tax bill. This is not a tax cut. This is a shell game. We are increasing the deficit. This is like a cash advance on your credit card. And that's from Dave.
You're right,
and,
Dave.
And Kathy says, the poor. The lowest quintile of citizens will get $60 per year, $5 per month. $1.25 per week, and that's from Catherine. And then And then from Tom, I'll admit I'm no accountant, but let Mr. Churchill know that I just ran the numbers on my own middle-class family of four and came up with a federal tax hike of $60. Well, a lot has to do, right, Chris? I think you'll say this, in terms of how much you're willing to take into consideration. If you say you're getting a tax cut, but you don't look at the other stuff, then you'd be right.
Well, if you're talking about my health care, you know, costs and stuff like that, then maybe that's true. But if you're just looking at just what you pay in taxes, then
okay, yeah,
you know, and there are, I'm not, you know, to go back to what Jen said earlier, there are ramifications that we don't know what they'll be. I mean, the deductions for charities and places like WAMC, that's something that is going to change, and you know,
and
that
I
could,
think it
is. That's a big deal.
Okay, and Richard said, our fancy tax cuts will indebt our children and their children. We in the middle class may get a tax cut and see some increase in our paycheck. The price for this fancy tax cut is to be paid by the next generations of Americans, so we don't have to worry, they do. That's all I got.
That's a whole lot of letters. Imagine if they had a tax hearing here. What that would
right,
look like.
Right, yeah, what would work? Absolutely. All right, so let's move on. Are we good? We can move on to other stuff.
Sure.
Does that sound good? All right. I don't want to get in the way of yelling. Go ahead.
I do think this the long-term impact of not being able to deduct charitable contributions is I don't think that I think it's going to have a real ripple effect for places like WAMC. But also, again, back to thinking about places like Joseph's House and Unity House and shelters and other entities many people will continue to give, but some people won't, or they won't give as much. And as there will be increasing strains on those organizations because of the impact of these tax and related corresponding budget cuts, they also will have less money coming in.
I agree with you that it's going to be a challenge, and this is actually what my column is about for tomorrow. I'm kind of talking to churches and nonprofits to see how they feel about all this, and they are worried, and it will be a test to see whether people give because they want to give or if people have been giving because they get the tax deduction.
Yeah, and it'd be interesting to know exactly where the money comes from. So you say something like a wonderful organization like Joseph's House, for example.
For those who are not from this area, it's a wonderful family shelter.
Yeah. And you say, okay, so does that money come from that top group who will continue to deduct their charitable expenses? Or does it come from, you know, the working class who understand what's happening?
And does the working class give because they get the deduction? Probably not. But we'll find out, I suppose.
Some do.
It might
Maybe.
Matter how they much might. They are able to. Yeah.
I agree. I think it's going to be the difference between, you know, the $10 out of someone like Maya's pocket or the, you know, $10,000 foundation grant.
Sure.
And I think there are a lot of other questions to look at ahead of you know, you really analyzing the impact. I think doing just a side-by-side alone of an individual's tax to married couples joint filing. I think there's a lot of interesting movement in that front. And I think just from a very local individual level, watchdogging just, you know, who's looking out for people who go to the H&R Blocks and other tax services versus having a corporate accountant, making sure that their taxes are done well, fairly, so they're not audited. I think there's going to be some problems when it comes to, it's a heavy lift for IRS accountants some in the coming years as well, I think.
An interesting article in the Times about how the IRS itself has been cut.
Yeah,
completely underfunded, yeah. And how are they going to afford to even put this in place?
You know, some people are giving twice as much this year so that they get the deduction. So charities might be not flooded with money exactly, but may have more than they're expecting now, and then go into kind of a dearth next year when the deductions
disappear. We've seen some of that here at WAMC, to be honest with you. There's some people who are really getting in under the wire.
Give now.
Because they understand that this is the time to do it.
But it's a change for charities, too, because so many of them have built their fundraising around Christmas and the end of the year and the tax issue that that it's they're a little bit they're floundering a little bit about how they market themselves.
And you can't neglect the fact, though, that I think if you again talk to anyone in this listening region, if you talk to any nonprofit charitable organization, the need has increased dramatically too. A lot of folks, I'm getting emails in my inbox saying, sure. We still need coats for this holiday drive. We're worried about getting enough, Christmas dinners on the table, so on and so forth. And fuel assistance is a big issue in our area. And you think just little things, like I talked to a neighborhood charity and the Lucen House in my neck of the woods, and they don't have a lot of kids there, but there's still 3 kids in that house who need hats and gloves. So the basics.
And with the inevitable budget cuts that are on the horizon, you're going to see a lot more pressure. And so it's the human service charities, but it's also the arts and the
exactly.
education. That which makes up the, that holds together the fabric of our society, the sure. human services, and that what defines us as we are as a society, the arts and others. And I think they're all going to suffer from this.
And one of the few things that stopped Ronald Reagan from these charitable deductions was the fact that he heard from a lot of rich people who sat on the boards of the Metropolitan Opera and these other places and said, Ronnie, you can't do this.
Right.
We're going to suffer. Now, I wonder where those people are this time.
Because they're going to get hit from both sides. Less federal funding and perhaps, most likely, fewer deductions, contributions.
And I think from throwing my education reporter's hat on for a minute, too, I think there's a great concern for students. In our region, where a lot of students depend on scholarships from nonprofits like the Berkshire Taconic Community Foundation,
sure.
just to subsidize things like textbook costs and things, and that's before looking at your student loan rates and your deductions from those rates and what colleges are able to deduct for having students. I think that's something that's also got to be closely looked at and what that long-term impact will be.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We welcome your letters. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. We'll be right back.
But then they hand me that little brown envelope. I peep inside. Lord, I lose all hope.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Jen Smith, Chris Churchill, and Teresa Bourgeois. We welcome your letters. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. And do we have more letters? Do you want to go through those real quick?
Anything you say, and I want to give a big shout out to Liz in the control room for playing Johnny Cash. Anytime you play Johnny Cash, all right with me.
Thanks, Liz.
Okay. And Rob says, I'm concerned about the elimination of tax credit for home equity loan interest, right?
Right.
Yeah, okay. I am having a great difficulty in getting information about this from the New York Times or elsewhere. Could you clarify? I assume this would seriously hurt many people. Well, the truth of the matter is, it was in the Times and it was in other papers, and it just said home equity, interest on home equity loans is no longer deductible. End of discussion, right?
I think going forward, I don't think it affects loans that are already
but
the broader point is that with the doubling of the standard deduction, very very few people are going to be itemizing anymore. That's so in a sense that doesn't even matter, because only a very small sliver of the population will still be itemizing in their taxes that way.
All right. I don't agree.
I don't agree either. I think PBS NewsHour also did a very good piece on that. I think it was last night. I'm not 100% sure because I watch online, but a number of people have looked at that home equity, the unintended consequences of that.
Why don't you? I don't understand why you wouldn't agree that people won't be itemizing as much.
What? Oh, go, keep going. Okay.
No. Why do you? I was letting Alan answer. Why do you disagree with him?
Well, because people are used to it. It's part of the deal. It's the way in which people calculate their lives. And many people
Wait.
Many people get home equity loans because that's the way they survive, Chris. And the fact that it's got deductibility attached to it is how they have calculated up to now. And it's just another way in which this Republican Congress is going to screw the poor who have to get by this way. Now you get to go.
No, but the point is that very few people will get, say you're a married household, your standard deduction will be $24,000. Very few people are going to itemize to get to that level of a deduction. So it's just not going to make economic sense for people to itemize anymore. That's why they think that the tax foundation, I think 25% of Americans itemize now. I think they're saying it's going to go down to 8% or
right.
something like that.
That's right. But Chris,
that's the point I'm making. You're saying that people...
I hear your point, and it's getting kind of tired and belabored. And that is that everything on that 24, you keep saying that that's what this increased deduction takes care of. Well, when you add up everything that increased deduction takes care of, you know, do the math is my point. You don't, you're really saying this is a coverall for everything that they've been trying to get away with.
My point is that very few people are going to itemize to $24,000. Your property taxes would have to be $15,000, $16,000. And down, that's why this affects downstate, because those people will.
On
could.
A little box on Long Island, they'll pay that.
Right. But for the average, most Americans don't itemize as it is. And when you double the standard deduction, you dramatically reduce the number of people who will itemize. Okay. So it erases a lot of these issues.
I think my point holds up.
And I think mine does.
Well, you're wrong. Okay. So here.
Well, go to the letters and let's get to
that.
That
wasn't me. I didn't.
No, I know.
I was okay. Good.
Yeah, you were.
I'm thinking he's wrong,
R,
but I didn't say
R says, stop reading the experts do the math. Chris is right about the numbers. We criticize Republicans for being anti-science. We can't be anti-math. Learn how to fill out the 1040 form. Well, when somebody else understands that, they'll tell me what it means.
Yeah, it is. He's right. It's basic math that when the standard deduction is $24,000, most people are no longer going to itemize. That's where the tax cut comes from for most people.
What about, says Eric, how about the fact that the disparity between rich and poor has never been wider, yet those wealthy corporations and individuals, I guess they're both individuals, which is the grossest infringement on the individual's constituents' ability to voice themselves fairly, have the capital to hire more already, and they don't. Why should I believe that with more money in their pocket, poor small folk will be suddenly saved? I'm with you, Eric. Good letter. And then from Charlie, tax law, record corporate profits still have not led to wage growth, and over a dozen giant U.S. conglomerates have already announced stock buyback programs. Exactly.
Exactly right.
This was a gift to Republican donors disguised as a puny tax cut for two of the five quartiles, while setting the stage for the devastation of Medicare, Medicaid, health care, future infrastructure projects, and anything else that would promote general welfare rather than promote Wall Street. And that's from Charlie. Charlie, I'm going to nominate you for the Pulitzer Prize for that one. Catherine says, taxes. One fallacy of the thinking behind this tax bill is the assumption that regular people have any discretionary income to begin with. That's a good point. That's the whole point I was trying to make just now in the home equity situation. Whatever we see from a tax cut, we'll go to debt, car repairs, food, peeling, painting, bills waiting to be paid.
But isn't that a good thing? I don't understand why that's a negative. If people have more money to pay their bills and all the debt that they have, that's a good thing.
Said from a guy, except that we've just talked about yacht owners putting extra money into yet another moon tide because it can't get into the Fire Island boat basin. I've mentioned this a number of times. I know what you're up to. Okay, and yes.
Alan, you haven't gotten Fire Island in a while. Good job.
Thank you.
Ding.
And yes, whatever money wealthy people gain from this will be taken out of circulation. Fat lot of good that does for the economy. And 2 points says no. Repatriate money. Why do you think this money will be used to help workers if it's brought to the U.S.? It's not helping any workers where it is now. If you get $2,000 tax break and a $4,000 health insurance, why do you think workers will benefit? Obama's not in office. It's not Obamacare anymore. It's Trump don't care. And that's from Noah.
Yeah, healthcare is going to change dramatically in the next year, not for the better.
And Danny says some moderate temporary tax cuts for the middle class, throwing some crumbs while the hyper-wealthy get enormous breaks and are not expected to use that money willingly to help the rest of society. Have they been known to do that in the past? Not really. That's them, not me. Gordon says, so what Chris is saying is that the middle class should be having to get a loaf of bread a week while the 1% get 3-course meals every day. That's a real middle class tax cut, and that's from Gordon. Go ahead, Chris.
Good job, Gordon.
Oh, I have agreed that this is too balanced towards the wealthy. But people keep saying that there's nothing in it for the middle class, and that's the only point I'm trying to make. $2,000 is a lot of money to people. And if you can pay down debt with it or pay down credit cards or buy some more stuff, then that's a good thing.
To which I say, bah, humbug. Oh, and
all right, well, yeah. You don't have to. You can spend the money any way you want, but I'll be buying stuff.
I'm not getting any money. That's the point. I'm losing money on this bill. I'm telling you that now. Okay, so good morning, folks. Teresa, thank you for your well-informed insights. And Chris Churchill, thank you for arguing a different side. It's so good to hear an opposing viewpoint on this panel. An intelligent and respectful discussion, and that's from Bobby and Troy.
Thank you, Bobby.
Thanks, Bobby.
Yeah, there you go. And Vinny.
Hi, Vinny.
My cousin. Not fighting. It seems to me that our Dem leaders have stood back and let the Republicans have their way. No fight on the Doug Jones delay, etc. With Jones in and McCain home, maybe we could have swayed one more vote. Wishful thinking. Just kidding. Sent from Vinny. And Nancy says, panel, about 45% of American households have an AGI of $30,000 or less. Even if they keep every penny, most of them will be struggling economically. Income inequality has been engineered since Reagan was the president. This tax, I think since George was the president, this tax legislation continues and exacerbates that trend. Minor decreases in payroll deduction short term are the sugar coating on the poison pill. Thank you from Nancy. Okay, Joe, take these away and put them.
But there has been a much more dramatic increase in income inequality in the last few decades, which is a real problem for the country.
All right, let's talk about other problems, and that would include a possible shutdown and the fact that Democrats are unlikely to force DACA. This goes to a letter that we just heard of what are the Democrats up to. Democrats unlikely to force DACA vote this week, probably averting a shutdown. Democrats are backing away from a pledge to force a vote this month over the fate of thousands of undocumented immigrants brought to this country as children. Angering activists are probably averting the threat of a government shutdown as a critical moment in spending negotiations with Republicans and President Trump. With a deadline of midnight Friday to pass spending legislation, dozens of Democrats have vowed to withhold support if Republicans refuse to allow a vote on a measure known as the DREAM Act that would allow roughly 1.2 million immigrants to stay legally in the United States. But a group of vulnerable Democratic senators facing re-election in conservative states next year are not willing to go that far, meaning the party is unlikely to muster the votes to block the spending bill.
Okay, so Teresa, you worked in the Senate. You know the mentality of the guys who are making these political decisions. So tell us what Chuck Schumer is thinking about his role right now, on the one hand, on the other hand.
Well, I think they have a couple of problems. They have a basic bandwidth problem in that so much is focused on the tax bill and you're coming up against the holiday and they have to figure this out. But not only do they have DACA to try to figure out, they also have the child health to figure out, bill to figure out. And they have the funding for disaster relief has to be worked out. FISA for some people have to, spying bill essentially. So the health centers money and the funding for hospitals when people come in and don't pay. So there are a whole host of issues on the table, all of them with critical constituencies. Plus, you have all of these senators up for election. And while DACA is very important, I think the problem is they're trying to figure out a fix for all of these. And they don't think that they can do it by the end of the week. They can get it through some things they can get through the Senate, but they can't get through the House. And so I think that's why it's not that they're wanting to let DACA go, but they're trying to do that in the midst of all of these other pending items.
So if you're Chuck Schumer, you worry, of course.
I think you try to.
You worry, of course, right, Teresa, that the American people will blame you a la Newt Gingrich for being the problem in shutting down the government.
I think that's right. I think the Democrats think they have a good thing going right now, and why mess with the karma? I mean, if you shut down the government and people blame you for it, then suddenly, you know, the halo is off your head.
I don't think he has the votes to shut down the government because it's too splintered, that there's some people that their absolute priority is DACA. There are other people, their absolute priority is Child Health Plus.
And there are other people, you know, who it's the, because, you know, the fires in California, Texas, whatever, it's the emergency funding. I think it's too splintered. Mm-hmm. And they just, they have to do these as some sort of package or whatever. They just don't have the political capacity right now.
And what would be the point of shutting down the government? I mean, everyone seems to agree that there'll be a vote on DACA in January anyways. So you'd
the problem is, what will it be, though? What's as you alluded to earlier, Jen, what are they going to have to give back to get to protect these young people?
So you're saying do it now for leverage kind of thing?
Well,
I mean, I guess at least
in theory,
the idea
was to do it now for leverage.
At very least. I see your
but
point.
They don't.
Well, it just seems like why shut it down when there's going to be a vote and debate on this in a few weeks anyway.
I think it's also a big issue for the Democratic Party in general, because a lot of their votes came from people who are very staunch DACA supporters. And I think when you have what appears to be a group of Democrats backpedaling on this, their campaign promises, I think it's sort of a bigger splinter for some people within the party. And you still have a certain, you know, group of Democrats who say we will not vote if this DACA spending is not put into this budget.
But the other point too is that there are senators from very conservative states where this would hurt them, and they're you know, they want to take back the Senate. They don't want to jeopardize.
If that's their only, if they feel that the only thing that they're shutting down the government for is immigration,
right. Mm-hmm.
Then that's a problem, because there are other groups of people who, well, why aren't we shutting down the government for children's health care? Or what about this funding for disaster relief or Puerto Rico?
I think
whatever.
For the longtime Dreamer supporters, I think this is a punch in the gut to, again, you know, not see some expedited motions on it. Also because, you know, back in June, Trump pretty narrowly and very unpublicized rescinded DAPA, which is, you know, deferred action on parents of Americans and basically the parents of the Dreamers that would grant them temporary status, you know, if within a certain time frame, that was rescinded pretty under the radar. So I think there's a fear that that could be affected if DAPA is not seen as a priority issue. And I think in terms of the greater picture of immigration, you have some fears that, you know, you have a potential DACA vote in mid-January. Meanwhile, especially in areas like ours where we have, you know, Massachusetts, for example, has a pretty large Haitian population. You know, you have a lot of people still in jeopardy with their temporary status. And so in a few months, we could have, you know, an influx of thousands of Haitians and other folks that are going to be deported. And I think it also takes a lot of time to just process these statuses. So there's a lot of factors at play. I think if you look at the most vocal DACA supporters, they're college students, and their futures really are dependent on this bill.
I think a couple of things. I think first of all, you might get a short term talking point, but versus a long term win.
Mm-hmm.
But my concern is, how do you get to the win on DACA? Because you have Republicans and Democrats who say that they're for DACA, but then you have another group of Republicans who say, I will only accept this if
they're border
and if
security
I get
provisions.
The border wall, if I get other things that even the DACA folks say, don't trade us for that. So
I
think it's really complicated.
It is complicated. I'm very interested, however, about what the average Joe in America is thinking about DACA. I mean, because after all, that's what politicians do. They make assessments, they hold their fingers up in the wind, and they say what's happening. I think Americans are fair about this. The parents, they're not so sure. But the kids who were brought here against their will, I think that's a logical argument, a fairness argument, that most Americans can understand.
I think polls show it's overwhelmingly popular.
Yeah, exactly.
That's why you have Republicans. Republicans, this is what the Dems were saying. If you forced a vote on this, if the Republicans were just forced to vote straight up or down, mm-hmm. Do the kids stay or not, they would vote for it. But they're trying to extract other things for that.
And I think you have to be careful, too, with, you know, looking at some of the demographic changes in our country. A lot of the quote-unquote average Joes are dreamers, are people who are either children, young people affected by this.
Or sympathetic to it. Parents, I mean, if you're Hispanic right now, this becomes an issue for you and for your and for the Spanish culture, because a lot of these people came from Latin American countries and other places. Mm-hmm. And therefore, it isn't only that I have a kid who's a DACA kid, but these people are against us, you know, and you feel that.
And I think that, you know, there's plenty of other populations, too. I mean, in the Berkshires and Pittsfield, we have a pretty decent-sized West African population.
Right, and indeed.
I used to tutor those students, and I think that's a big thing, too, how it affects schools and, you know, the infrastructure of society, too.
We have a minute left. Go ahead.
I just think we have to focus on the Virginia race, where one vote won for a Democrat in the House of Delegates. So now the Virginia House of Delegates is tied, which is astounding.
One vote.
The woman won by one vote. So if people say your vote doesn't count, it doesn't matter if I don't go vote, voting matters. We saw that voting mattered in Alabama, and in Virginia, it has changed the tide there. One vote.
All right, let's wrap up. And my thanks to everybody who took part this morning. Teresa, Chris, Jen, Alan, thank you very much.
Don't forget to get that check in the mail right now before January 1st.
For WAMC, WAMC.org, 1-800-323-9262. We will continue our conversation here on the roundtable after this short break.